Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a weekly podcast of the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host, podcast producer, and sports writer for the LSJ, joined by Free Beat writer Chris Solari and LSJ sports columnist Graham Couch. We are recording here on a Tuesday afternoon from the Lansing State Journal, 300 South Washington Square. Graham, you forgot the address last week, but we'll see if you remember next time you get thrown into hosting duties and when Chris is on the road and unavailable to come in the studio.
It's also known as the friend zone. And by the way, that was the best intro you've ever done. You slowed down, you showed energy, you enunciated. Phil, you might have a future in this.
I prefer talking 100 miles an hour and trying to get my point out as quickly as possible.
Mumbling over everything. I appreciate that.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of like doing it from the car. Yeah, it was much, much nicer visually for me, and I'm sure for you guys as well.
Well, for me, it was not fun for me because I had to go back and re-listen everything, and I had to, sometimes when you have to go back and edit more than you normally do when you're recording live in studio, so.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah. But you know what? We would rather have Chris on than not have Chris on, so we make the sacrifices that we need to make.
Yeah, it was a little bit of an interesting week, wasn't it?
Yeah, just a little bit of one that we definitely need you to on. And we will talk more about that up on this week's Spartan Speak.
What a segue.
I really would love to talk about just how I have yet to have a real full basketball season to focus on.
What?
Since I've taken over the beat.
Yeah, but how many times has there actually been that period?
Well, let's talk about 2017 with the issues in the football program.
But I'm just saying, how many times has there been that period, a full basketball season? It doesn't happen very often that you don't get something.
Yeah, but there's been some pretty significant things versus something here or there.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
We will start with Michigan State football. We'll talk about Mel Tucker, who we talked about extensively last week, being the new coach. He's hired some assistants since we last met, so we will touch upon those. Then we were going to talk a little bit about Jordan Simmons, who was the recruit who did not sign after D'Antonio announced his retirement, but he has signed now, and we'll talk about his impact, and we'll kind of look into the crystal ball a little bit, see what we foresee happening with Michigan State football over the next, you know, 1 week to a month or so. And then after that, we'll talk a little basketball. I mean, it's been 3 days now, but the wild finish at the end of the Maryland game, I think we're all still thinking about, and thoughts are in our heads, so we'll kind of recap that and talk about how we're feeling about that and whether that game is a sign of things to come or maybe even like the perfect encapsulation of the team, or if Michigan State can get it turned around. And then after that, we will preview a little bit Thursday's game versus Nebraska and make our predictions for that game. All right, guys, let's start with football. First off, two MSU assistants from D'Antonio's staff will be coming back, Ron Burton and Mike Tressel. First off, are you surprised that they are both coming back, especially since Burton was reportedly going to Indiana? And how
he was
does
a little
help?
More than reportedly. He was... Paperwork was signed, from what I understand.
Interesting. And then, you know, him and Mike Tressel coming back. What does that mean for the team? And is that good for continuity, or do you guys actually think Tucker just should have started with a clean slate from the entirety of the
I'll start soccer? With it, because a little bit of yes, a little bit of no. I obviously got reports Thursday night from someone in the know, and that's I don't want to out my source with that, but it wouldn't have been reported if it wasn't someone who was a firsthand source about the decision that not to retain. The one thing that was left out was the caveat: some of these guys might be asked back to interview for their jobs again. And clearly, Mike Tressel had worked with Mel Tucker before at Ohio State. And generally, when I say I am surprised a little bit, I was a little bit surprised that they didn't clean the slate, but I'm not surprised because you, especially at this point in the game, and this is, let's face it, this is a really fluid situation right now. You name me another coaching job that has opened up and been filled in February at the Power 5 level. And the only ones that I can think of even remotely close are Ohio State when Jim Tressel was forced to resign or retire, and they promoted internally with Luke Fickell, ironically. And the other one is that I can think of is Randy Walker, when he passed away, and they promoted Fitzgerald internally. So those are the only things that I can think of that are kind of like this. So there's just a little bit of fluidity with it. But you also, I think, if you're Mel Tucker, need people who know the personnel to help you through it, especially with spring practice starting in less than a month.
Yeah, you want to have your guys and maybe a little bit of the hang. And so if you can get guys you know who are – from the former staff, so they're still kind of your guys. I think there's value in that. And you know, when you go through these transitions, you need the players to look at you and not at the former regime, right? You can't have a divide on the staff, and so that needs to be something that's kind of carefully sought out. And often you see when these sort of things happen, that a coach will be there for a short time and maybe not the whole for that long. Like, I'm curious to see what Mike Tressel's role is on the staff, and that may be factor in how long he is actually there. I think the Ron Burton hire, I mean, he's a very well-regarded defensive line coach and somebody who's done well recruiting for Michigan State. So I think that made some sense. I think you're looking to put together the best staff you can. And Mark D'Antonio had a pretty good staff in ways for a long time. And there are guys on that staff you definitely want to consider.
And, you know, obviously at the basketball game on Saturday when we talked about the Maryland game, Harlan Barnett was there. I mean, it was pretty visible right in the middle of everybody with Mike Tressel and Ron Burton. That's a guy that has familiarity with all the personnel as well. He left for Florida State. I thought maybe he might have burned a few bridges with some of the comments he said about having dudes down at Florida State compared to Michigan State. But then at the same point, those dudes didn't really do much for him down at Florida State, and he's out of a job. So, and to be fair, not necessarily all his fault there, but he would make sense to come back on this staff if they do make a hire like that because of his knowledge of the personnel as well. The question is, who runs the defense? Because, you know, Mike Tressel's role isn't defined yet. And Harlan Barnett is coming from being a sole defensive coordinator
They work together at one point as co-defensive coordinators. And is that something that, you know, they want? And then the other question is, what would that be like if, say, Barnett was the defensive coordinator over Tressel, who had just been the...
Right.
It's a weird situation. So I'm very curious to see how this all plays out.
And again, you know, Mel Tucker is busy right now trying to get everything together and formalized with his staff. I mean, some of these names out, I mean, they made the Chris Kapilovich hire official offensive line coach from Colorado coming with him. As Phil mentioned before, there have been a bunch of reports that Jay Johnson is going to be the offensive coordinator. Bruce Feldman had that out there, but nothing has been confirmed through MSU, and nothing really has been confirmed through Johnson, where at least Kapilovich yesterday had quotes out there talking about his new job and why he was leaving Colorado.
That's something to watch, because all these things, you know, things can change on you in a hurry. Like, and it can look like, and that's why even a guy like Feldman, who's been pretty on this story and is a trustworthy reporter, when he says expected to, that doesn't mean it's done. And so that's something to watch.
And I mean, look at the Luke Fickell situation. I mean, that was a done deal on a Thursday. Many people thought even on a Wednesday, goes into the weekend and it's not a done deal. I mean, that's the fluidity of the moment. That's the situation that Mark D'Antonio left behind when he resigns on February 4th. I mean, there's a lot of fluidity that goes on within the program. There are coaches now who more than likely are going to be searching for new jobs, and there aren't many jobs.
We've seen already with...
There's going to be a domino effect from this job, though.
Yeah, and we've seen a few of, you know, we've seen Terrence Samuel wind up at UNLV. And so there have been a few things here and there. And so, I do think it's worse for MSU's former D'Antonio staff than it is for MSU. Like, I understand the timing isn't ideal, but, you know, a lot of guys you'd be hiring in December are guys you'd be the same guys you'd be hiring in February. They'd still be on other staffs. You're still hiring somebody away from a staff, and you have a decent size pool of money to do it.
But more from the coaches who were in place thinking that they were going to be here this year.
No, those guys got screwed. Yep.
That January is an important time for them because they can go to the National Coaches Convention, which I believe is in Nashville in mid-January this year, make contacts, say, hey, maybe I'm looking for something, maybe I'm not. You're into February now. Those opportunities are gone and have been filled.
You also made a lot of money coaching a mediocre football team for a couple of years, and unless you're a real moron financially, you should be okay for 1 year.
And that might be why partially Mike Tressel may have came out, because he knew there would be limited jobs. I guess I was thinking about that in terms of, let's say they do hire Harlan Barnett, who's going to be the DC and who's not. Like, no, it's not like there was a lot of options left if you're asked to come back.
We're also assuming that the new head coach doesn't want to bring someone from the outside to install what he wants.
So the best case scenario, the comparison I have, is the only time I've ever covered something like this was the first year I was in Kalamazoo. I covered, and I know one listener is going to come in, and I don't even want to say it, Bill Cubitt.
17 minutes.
So he came in as the new coach, and Brian Rock, who had been the offensive coordinator under Gary Darnell the year before, was the one assistant coach who was retained, and he had been on the staff when Cubitt had been there earlier, so there was a relationship, like with Tressel. Right.
Like but with Dan Enos, when he was on John L's staff,
correct.
He had come from Mark D'Antonio's staff at Cincinnati. He was retained when D'Antonio was
correct.
Hired.
And sometimes the role changes, like Brian Rock then became the running backs coach. He went from offensive coordinator to running backs coach, and he was only there a year, and then he went on to Purdue. But it was a way to have some continuity, to help a guy out with a gig. And so with Tressel, I'm not saying that's what that is. I have no idea. I'm just saying you do see that sometimes with guys you have relationships with. So I'll be very curious to see how that's defined and how long a guy like Mike Tressel stays on the staff.
Yeah, and I think they're good coaches. I mean, Ron Burton, sure. You've seen the what the job he's done with the offensive line or defensive line. That someone wanted to hire him away when all this went down. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. And the fact that he was basically 1 foot out the door, and apparently Mel Tucker was able to talk him back, that's a good sign for Mel Tucker, and it's also a good spot for Ron Burton to maybe capitalize on the success that he's had.
Let's play a little hypothetical with Jay Johnson. I mean, do you guys remember the Minnesota 2016 team at all? He was the offensive coordinator for that team, and they went 9-4, won a bowl game. And I think their SP plus offense was in the 70s. I don't know if you guys.
It was Jerry Kill's year, right? That where he resigned.
No,
in the
I believe
of the year.
It was Tracy the other Clay's year. It was yes.
Was Clay's the whole year as the guy? Would Kill
resign? I'm not 100% sure if yeah. it was. It
I just
was
a right quick week point. A quick Wikipedia search said yes yesterday.
Okay, so
I don't know if you remember.
Which by the way, is Mr. PJ Flex getting a lot of credit for once again taking over a program in the dumps? No, the foundation of that program was 9-4. Okay. Like a lot of these coaches love that. Got to change the culture. Jerry Kill could coach circles around PJ Fleck. I don't know what to tell you, but Jerry Kill, if he's still at his health, would still be at Minnesota. So watch yourself there. But I don't remember that Minnesota offense all that well. I do know it was not a high octane offense that Kill ran at Minnesota.
Yeah, that was Tracy Clay's only year, and they finished 9-4, but they finished tied for fourth in the really weak West at that point.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on and talk a little recruiting a little bit. We've seen Michigan State has been very active in the recruiting since Mel Tucker got hired. We saw a number of recruits have tweeted out they've received offers from Michigan State in the past week. And the one guy who did not sign his national letter of intent when the second signing period began after D'Antonio's retirement, Jordan Simmons, he's a 3-star running back from Georgia. He signed on late Sunday night, right? Yes, yep. late Sunday night. So the fact that they were able to bring him in after he kind of wavered a little bit, I understand why he wavered completely. I don't blame him at all for that. But the fact they were able to keep his commitment and bring him in, that's got to be a good sign for the program right now.
Yeah, and I talked to Jordan after the coaching situation happened when Mark D'Antonio retired and when he publicly said, I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit here for signing day and see. And that was something he wanted to see. So he wanted to see who they were going to bring in. At that point, when I talked to him, everything was leaning towards Fickell, which, again, shows you how quickly things can change. It doesn't surprise me how quickly he signed because he was a target for Mel Tucker at Colorado. So there's a relationship there. Mel Tucker obviously had been at Georgia and knows that recruiting ground, which to me tells you that the ties were there already with Jordan Simmons, but also to that area, which is a big deal because Michigan State's done pretty well in Georgia the last decade, really. I mean, you think about, all the way back into guys like Denard and, yep. and Mumphrey and even some of the guys that are on the team right now. I mean, they've had some success down there and brought some kids up north.
Yeah, and look, this is a guy who maybe brings some speed that they're going to need, they're not – I think their offensive playmakers may turn out to be a strength, but – you can never have enough speed on offense. See at the NFL level. You see it at the college level.
You saw it in the bowl game.
Yep.
I thought the one thing about Brad Salem's offense that we finally got a chance to see against Wake Forest was speed and space.
Yep. No, I do think it's smart for a kid, though, when you don't know what's going on, step back, and then he stayed with his commitment. He obviously talked to Mel Tucker. He obviously had a good feel for things, and he went through with it. And if he had gone somewhere else, I would have been okay too. It's a different regime than you originally committed to.
Yeah, it was a little different for him than the other two guys, Josiah Robinson and Donovan England, that Michigan State was only their Power Five offers. So they probably just didn't want to wait around too much and be like, this is the school we're going to. Whereas Drew Simmons probably had a bunch of Power Five options outside. I don't know if Georgia
was one of those late risers.
I don't know if Georgia or LSU would come back for him after initially offering him, maybe last year or whatever.
But he would
someone
have
someone yeah. would yes, someone would have come in for him. All right. let's talk a little, let's peer into our crystal balls here and talk a little bit about the future of Michigan State football. What do you guys see happening with
By the way, next... Phil is touching his temples now, like is his crystal ball. Like,
yes, yes.
Great visual.
If we had this on...
Karnak, the friend.
Yes, if we had this on YouTube, like Couch on the Roof, people are on Facebook Live, people could have just seen me channel my inner Karnak, as Chris said. All right. What do you guys think is going to happen with the program in the next month or so?
Well, they're gonna fill out the staff. I think it'll happen quickly. I think a lot more will happen this week. I think they're trying to get some things in place right now. And then I think you're going to see a spring game date emerge here pretty quickly. And it'll be an interesting spring. It really will be. And the question is, you know, for what's really interesting for guys like the two of us, Chris, is like, how much of it do you actually see because you're on the road covering basketball? And usually we love that, right? Who the hell wants to cover spring football?
Well, we didn't get to see much in the Mark D'Antonio era.
Not at the end, right? Not at the end. And so, but now it's interesting.
That makes sure there might be a short postseason for MSU basketball. We'll get to that later.
It might, but the calendar's so late this year because the calendar couldn't get its stuff together that the NCAA tournament doesn't start until March 20th something. By that point, you could be in the second, third week of the spring practice.
How long do you think it'll take to fill out the staff? Do you think by the time we record next week, the staff will be filled out?
I'd say it's going to be pretty close to it because they need to get things going. But I do think that the biggest thing that we are going to see this spring is open competitions, particularly on offense. I think that you're going to see that on the offensive line because you're bringing in a guy in Kapilovic who's got his idea of what he wants to see. And there are veterans coming back, and a lot who have played because of injuries.
And at quarterback and receiver.
In particular, quarterback is going to be an open competition. And, you know, there's still, because of the portal, because of everything, how it went down, you know, this is, you see coaching changes, and this isn't too, I guess, risque to even to speculate about, but some guys will just leave because they don't like the coaching change. You know, that then you've got to fill those spots on the fly, and that's where the portal might come into play if that happens. At the same point, you also might see a lot of guys just completely buy into Mel Tucker.
I would be surprised too, and I guess if it plays out that it's not clear, but I would be surprised if all three quarterbacks are on the roster in the fall, because you know you're in a position where there's only room for one, and it just they're all separated by a year. And it's, unless it really truly is one of those things where they all feel like they have a shot leaving the spring, and somebody's gonna have an inkling it's not gonna be them, and I think that person probably leaves. You know, you just don't get many Damian Terry, Tyler O'Connor situations in college football.
Do you want to take a bold shot and guess who it might be who would leave?
I don't, okay. because I think we all know. And I just don't want to say that about a kid.
Okay.
Well, and here's the thing. The difference is Mark D'Antonio has been loyal to a fault to his veterans and returning players in those instances, Tyler O'Connor being one of them, Andrew Maxwell being one of them. And this is different. This is a different regime. You know,
you're going to have to be the best guy for sure.
If it is Jay Johnson, we'll have to find out what he wants and what his beliefs are in not only what he envisions a quarterback to be, but what he has with the roster. You know, some coaches will try and fit a square peg in a round hole. Some coaches will just play malleable with their offense based upon what they've got. You know, we have to figure that out about where Jay Johnson is, if he's offensive coordinator or whoever does take over the offense. But I do know that the reports that I've had, you know, all the way back to the fall, and again, is that Peyton Thorne is a guy to keep an eye on.
I think he was, when we made some predictions maybe three or four podcasts ago. Like I said, I guess Peyton Thorne would be the starter in week one. I still feel that way.
I said that back a long time ago.
Well, then I agreed with what you said a long time ago. Then.
And yet, it's based on the same crap that every year the guy who doesn't play, who redshirts, is the guy everybody talks about. And I'm with you, Chris, that there was more buzz about Peyton Thorne than years.
I mean, we've seen
he's
Rocky
a coach's
Lombardi,
son.
And we also think that if Lombardi had played well in practice, we would have seen him sub in for the Werke at some point during the season. So
I think
that makes you think that it's going to be not him doubt. And somebody else.
I
understand your point.
Yeah. Like Lombardi is a coach's son, but I think that there's maybe a little difference here. Just, you know,
based on what?
That's a good point.
I mean, we're all based on this is what D'Antonio
this
did.
This is the people who have seen him.
So I'm gonna do a little ripping.
But what does it mean? It's practice.
I'm gonna do a little ripping of Mark D'Antonio here. All right,
the floor is yours.
All right. So a couple things that happen when you close down, and I think Mel Tucker's gonna be a little more open. I don't know how open. A couple things happen when you close ranks like he did. One, when you don't let people in to tell stories about your staff, and then they become just the coordinator who can't move the ball. There is little empathy for them. People don't see them as human, right? So you got to let people have access to people, because for the last 7 years, if we'd been writing stories about these guys as people and their families, when things weren't working, people would feel a greater connection to them. And so there's a lot less of that now. And that's on Mark D'Antonio, because people have tried and he's turned it down. When you do not open spring practice, when you do not open a scrimmage in August, when you do not open anything else but the spring game, and you tell everybody Andrew Maxwell is performing so well all spring and then he stinks in the spring game, A, you lose credibility for anybody trusting what you're seeing in practice. B, it puts a lot of pressure on a kid in spring game. Open a little more up. Because if you've got a kid who's got talent, don't put the pressure on him in that spring game. Let another scrimmage be open. These are things that just help your team, help your people. And when you close ranks and do this crap paranoia that college football coaches do, you help nobody, and you certainly didn't help yourself.
Major college, I think, is the way to describe it, because I do think there are coaches at the lower levels who don't have that rampant paranoia, but but that's also the pressure they feel that they're under, and I think that's important to say. They feel they're under because of the need to win and the need to do all these things.
And you get great stories like Jim Comprioni, back when Saban was here, you know, what did he do? He transcribed an entire thing that was said at spring practice, an open practice that Saban had, you know, for the early days of the internet, and everybody goes, the coaches clam up, right? So that's what they fear, right? They fear and back then nobody knew what they were doing with the internet. I don't know, Comp probably didn't think he was doing anything wrong, you know, but that's the sort of stuff that
I don't even know if his stuff was online at that point. It was the print paper.
Did they run it in the print?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Reams and reams of words.
Boy, I can imagine Saban being
20s of thousands of words every month.
No, I remember the product. I don't remember he didn't do the one time he ran a transcript of what was being said at practice in an open practice. Yeah. Were you around for that?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was doing stuff for Jim at that point or not. But
was it you who did it?
No, it was not me.
I was on
Prodigy. Chris was the underling who had the recorder out for the entirety and then had to go back and transcribe.
I was home at prodigy.net using my parents' 15 hours a month trying to log on.
So that may have been way right towards the end of Saban's tenure.
Yeah, I have no idea. I just know the story. Probably don't even know it well enough to tell it to everybody, but I just did. So I apologize.
No, that's good entertainment. All right, let's wrap this up quickly. Any other Michigan State assistants that you think will end up being on the staff? Take a stab, experts.
I'm not going to do it because I don't have the sourcing within Mel Tucker's sphere to do it. You know, I mean, you could ask Bruce Feldman. I mean, I think he's Tucker's new roommate, maybe. But sorry,
shots fired.
No, I like Feldman personally a lot. I just found it hilarious
where the relationships come in that you built over the course of a career.
That's journalism, by the way. That's a word. I mean, that's Feldman doing his job. One day it's like. Sources, Mel Tucker, the head coach, the next day, feature on Mel Tucker with Mel Tucker's voice. Okay, we got that. Oh, let me put 1-to-1. Ah, gotcha. So it was obviously a very direct source.
I guess I'm curious to see if Brett Bielema, who couldn't play his way into the Michigan State job or push his way into the Michigan State job, can now push his way into the Colorado job.
Maybe.
Desperate times. He wants back in the game, apparently.
Well, let's switch sports here, guys. All right, as we go
I had gone off the rails a little bit.
It is delicious.
I'm telling stories of things I don't know.
But it would have been fun to report on stories about Bielema just running around naked in the locker room or whatever. Maybe not fun.
Fun's probably not the right word there.
But there's that infamous photo of him. That was in Wisconsin, right? Where he's got his shirt off in the locker room celebrating with the team. Nobody? Okay.
Just you. Just on the internet. Just me. Searching just Brett Bielema shirtless.
Just me being all caps two online for that. All right, let's talk basketball. Saturday evening, we saw a crazy basketball game. So when Aaron Henry hits the runner with 3:24 to go, that puts Michigan State up 60-53. That completes a 15-point deficit they had in the first half. So they'd outscored it by 22 points during that roughly 20-minute stretch of Maryland. Looked absolutely awful in that stretch. I mean, I think you guys and myself, everybody had to think that game was pretty much over. Maryland had shown no life, like I said, for almost 20 minutes. And then out of nowhere, They put together a 14-0 run to end the game, and they somehow come away with a 67-60 win in Breslau Center. Guys, I mean, you've had some 3 days to reflect on it now. Are you guys still shocked at how that game ended and how Michigan State somehow did not close that game out?
I don't know if I've seen Breslau Center as loud as it was and as quiet as it was in that short a period of time. And maybe even it's one of the loudest I can remember that place being. I think because of the circumstances with the 2000 team being back, I think with the way they fought their way back and then just to have the rug pulled out from under them, I think if there was an equivalent to it from a football sense, I could think of the Michigan game in 2015 of how quickly everything felt euphoric for Michigan fans at Michigan Stadium and then whoop. Fumbled snap, touchdown, what just happened?
Maryland was the better team, and they would have been if Michigan State had won the game. So that's my first point. And so, like, Breslin can lie to you, right? It can elevate you, and that's what created that run. And you see things that you don't see in Michigan State. You saw the same things with Penn State as you do in Maryland, where you have a senior who's driven. It's his time. He made some key shots at the end. I mean, I thought, except for one defensive mistake that was on something they did new with a rescreen, Rocket Watts was terrific. I mean, Anthony Cowan started 0 for 5 in the second half, 0 for 3 from 3.
You're talking about the last rescreen?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so there was, you know, Michigan State played well in spurts in the second half, got off to a horrible start. Maryland didn't play well for a while, but they got something to them. This is going to be their year, same with Penn State. Those are the two best teams in the Big Ten. Michigan State is not one of them. And so we'll find out more about Michigan State when they go to Maryland. But to me, the 7-point, like, it didn't shock me. It just didn't. Like, Maryland's a better team than them. Their senior guard is in a place right now where this is his time. He's possessed. You know, Winston.
But those weren't layups. I mean, he's shooting from 28
shots.
Feet out.
He's making shots. But you think about
what, and they were 0-10 at that point.
Yeah,
the defense had been so
and
good.
It took some amazing plays to win. Even if they had lost, though, they were the better
right.
team. And they would have been the better team today. They'd be the better team tomorrow. They're going to be the better team, I think, for the rest of the year, unless we see something from Michigan State emerge. And the thing that'll be interesting for MSU going forward is before they lost this game, when they were still in the hunt for Big Ten title, having to go to Maryland and to Penn State and have Iowa's pretty good and just won a road game at Minnesota and Ohio State has had an uptick all part of your final five games is kind of inconvenient. But now having to go to Penn State and to Maryland is ideal because, again, Breslin can lie to you. Playing on the road in Nebraska does you no good. You need games to find out if you can get to a certain level, and they got two left. They might beat Iowa, and they're not as good as Iowa. They might beat Ohio State, and they're not as good. Again, home court lies to you, and I think that it lied to them in this game. That Maryland was the better team for more of the night, and I was, you know, I think, it, you know, you can argue late that they weren't for a while, and I thought Michigan State defensively played about as well as we've seen in a while. But they don't have they don't you know it is what it is. Yeah. Cassius Winston, he doesn't have that look to him that he had a year ago, or that Cowan or Lamar Stevens have.
The one thing I will sort of disagree with is that so from the 2:57 mark of the first half all the way to the 3:24 mark of the second half, Maryland scored 14 points in that stretch. I just don't know if.
Well, they're poorly coached,
I don't know if you talk about how they outplayed. You said they outplayed Michigan State for the entire of the game. I don't know if I necessarily felt that way because they were so poor during that 20 minute stretch
out of the gate. I mean, it was another slow start that again can't have particularly at home. They were killing them on the boards, just crushing them. I mean, I give Michigan State credit for getting back within one by the end of the game because they were. I think it was 21-9 on the glass at one point in the first half. And Maryland was getting out and running in transition. Michigan State couldn't. Everything that happened, though, from that point right at the end of them, and I think Kyle Arnes played a little bit of a role when he came in terms of, as Tom Izzo said, it's kind of a stabilizing force and getting some cohesion. That team defensively started to pick things up. They heard about it at halftime. They had to rebound, and they did after that. But you got to make those plays down the stretch. And that's, you know, where do you see that? You see guys that are veterans. You see Penn State when they came in making plays down the stretch to win. You saw, and what is that team? It's senior led. What's Maryland senior led or senior? And I guess you could say Jalen Smith being a sophomore. you know, a high-end sophomore. That he in many years he's kind of a junior senior kind of player, because he guys like that usually are in the NBA by now. But you see that, and you don't see that when you take Cassius Winston, take Xavier Tillman out of the mix, which I thought Maryland did down the stretch defensively really well in those final 3-4 minutes.
And Cassius doesn't have the look to him that Cowan does. And look, it's not his fault, it is with the year. He doesn't have that passion this year. He doesn't have that. He's not in the locker room just angry over a loss like this doing, and nobody expects him. I don't think it's his priority, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And maybe that kicks in at the end of the year. It's just, you know,
I don't know if it's his makeup anyways.
It might not be, but
there isn't that guy.
They don't have that guy. He had a look to him last year that he doesn't have right now, late in games, and just sort of driving that team. And sometimes it's as simple as you only get so many goes in college basketball where you can give a crap about every game along the journey. And that was last year, and they beat Michigan 3 times. They won the Big Ten title, his second. They got to the Final Four. There's nothing that's new that's interesting until you try to win a national championship, which I don't know if this team can do. Because when you look at Maryland, the way they're playing right now, Cowan, I think, is playing better than Winston consistently. I would take Winston as a player over the long haul. But what I mean is, right now, the way Cowan's playing, Jalen Smith. So if you were to draft a team, I would take Maryland's best two players over either one of Michigan State's best two players just right now. And then the way they're with a little more veterans and wings, the length, the way the rest of those guys, they are connected. And Kyle Arns talked about that a little bit after the game. Michigan State was very connected last year. Maryland's connected. Penn State's connected. What Michigan State is not is connected. And that is, you saw it defensively. They did for a while, and they looked really good. We saw in the first half how scary good against Illinois they can be. And yeah. So there are still things, elements of hope that Michigan State has to have. It's just, you're also running out of time.
To their credit, they haven't had kind of the full quiver in a lot of ways. I mean, you think about Winston getting hurt at the end of the December and coming back physically a little bit from that, but also everything else he's dealing with.
Yep.
You know, Tillman at some point was sick for a while. Kithier was sick for a while. Gabe Brown sick for a while. I mean, all these guys that and in and out where you're moving pieces around. You know, Watts being out for an extended period of time. They haven't had that full length of time together to gel. Not that last year's team did either because of the injuries, but they also had Kenny Goins and Matt McQuaid who were the consistents. This team doesn't have that. They've got Gabe Brown. They've got Aaron Henry. They've got Marcus Bingham. They've got Kithier. They've got Hall and Watts. All those guys are playing significant minutes, and they're all first and second year guys. They're not fourth and fifth year guys like you had with McQuaid, with Goins, and really even the beginning of that year with Langford.
So I want to ask you guys this. At this moment, where do you guys see Michigan State falling in the NCAA tournament in terms of seed line? Like, they are all over the place if you look at, you know, various projections. Like, they're 12th overall in the net rankings, which would make them a 3 seed, which is what they use for the RPI. Right. That may not be where they finish, but that would put them as a 3 seed. And if you look at Kevin Paga's KPI rankings, he has them as a 9 seed. So, I mean, that's a pretty wide range for where people evaluate Michigan State. Where would you guys place them seed-wise at this point?
I think it depends a lot on how they finish. So let's just say they win their home games. Okay, let's just do what generally happens at Brett, because they don't play the two home games they have left aren't against teams as good as Maryland or Penn State.
Iowa, Ohio State.
Yep, they're good teams, but not as good. So say they win their two home games, lose their two road games to Maryland and Penn State, but beat Nebraska. So they go 3-2. So at that point, you're at 20 wins, 11 losses going to the Big Ten tournament. And you've got probably you'd have about 7 quality wins, really net top, you know, wherever that quad one wins. At that point, although I'm not sure where, but you'd have about there. And I think it's very hard to, because the Big Ten, there's so much fluidity in terms of who is actually stronger than who.
And I think the Big Ten tournament's going to matter some as well.
I think they should cancel the Big Ten tournament.
I know you think that, but I think this might be a year where Michigan State needs to do a little bit more of what they did last year.
To do what, though? What does it do? You're going to be in the tournament. And the seeding doesn't matter, because the seeding this year, like I was looking at the 1 seeds right now and the 2 seeds, like, there's nobody who's great. Like, who are you afraid of? Like, the advantage of being a 6 seed versus an 8 seed, usually there's a huge advantage of a 6, right? You avoid the 1s if you want to make a run. Who are the 1s right now? Baylor? Baylor doesn't scare anybody. Baylor's a good team. They're not any better than Dayton, who might be a 3. I'd be a hell. If Michigan State ain't beating Dayton, they might beat Baylor. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of that. Michigan, people are saying, oh, it could be, like, The NCAA almost needs to make sure they take Michigan, for example, if they keep playing like this, and make them not a 7 or 8 seed, because that's not fair to one seeds. That Michigan team's going to beat Baylor right now. And so I just think there's a lot of I don't think the seeding matters as much this year as it does most years, because the middle and everything's so muddled all the way through.
That's fair. It's fair. But I think that from a confidence standpoint, you go 3-2 down the season, you go into the NCAA tournament like you did last year with on a hot streak. That, to me, is every bit as important as seeding in this.
Or in 15. You remember they made that run? Right. And that they're
I think they made it to the championship game in 15 and lost.
Yeah, to Wisconsin. And that. Yeah. But still, they were playing really well all of a sudden. And they played themselves off the bubble.
And this team... Yeah. Outside of since January or early January has not had that stretch.
No,
they need to find their and Izzo talked about spending Monday focusing on Michigan State and then turning his attention to Nebraska. And I think there needs to be some of that. And I think that's what a Big Ten tournament would be.
Well, it could be. It depends what happens before then. Like if you play well against Maryland and Penn State on the road and say beat one of them, then you might as well check out of the Big Ten tournament. It's a waste of time.
Maybe.
But if you don't, then you could use it for something, because you're right. You do need it. I'm you know me. I'm anti Big Ten tournament, and especially in a year like this where so much is going to be. I mean, to me, they ought to take Penn State and Maryland. You guys play on the Sunday. You're the best two teams. Anybody who wins it beyond you should not put up a banner, because you're not one of the best two teams. And I'm just sorry. The beauty of this Big Ten, where you beat the hell out of each other, never more so has the regular season been truly an accomplishment to survive this and win this.
Sure, if you have everybody playing each other.
It's pretty close to it, though. It's close enough. Those two teams are the best teams. We can see it in basketball. You know, you can watch all these teams. The best two teams in the league are Maryland and Penn State.
All right, speaking of Nebraska, that's who they play Thursday. What do you guys expect to see from the game?
Jack Hoiberg starting.
Ooh, I love a hot take.
That's a bold prediction.
You know I love a hot take.
No, I don't see Jack Hoiberg
starting. Will we see Xavier Tillman there?
He has said he's going.
He told me on Saturday he plans to be there.
Well, that was before the kid was born, though.
But they were inducing on Sunday.
I know, but I still, things came out easy.
Yeah, it was, and everything
went well.
Congratulations to him, by the way. Yes. Little X has shown up. 12:38 Monday morning, I believe his mom has said, and all are doing well.
Which is good.
But Tillman told me his plan was spend Monday, spend Tuesday with his wife, get back into the swing of things, maybe for classes on Tuesday, Wednesday, and then go make the trip to Nebraska on Thursday.
And they need him, even at Nebraska. This team without Xavier Tillman, it could get scary. You'd have to play Thomas Kithier 40 minutes, because you need that. You need the guy who thinks the game like Tillman, and he doesn't have the physical qualities.
No.
But if you watch when Tillman's in foul trouble, what Izzo does. Kithier's always on the floor because he can't have two of the other guys together. He can't have Hall and Bingham or Marble. Kithier's got to be the guy who's in there who gives you those elements. But
I think he's going to be a good player the next 2 years.
Kithier?
Once he grows into himself a little bit more. He's a very cerebral player, and you saw that in the Maryland game, the impact that he made, fully healthy finally from everything, made an impact defensively and knowing where to be. And even some garbage buckets.
It'll be interesting going with Kithier, because I do agree with you on that. I think he's not the longest guy. He's got some athletic limitations. And they are, depending on what Xavier Tillman does after this year, you could have sort of a glut at the 4 and 5 spots a little bit.
He's a great off-the-bench role player.
He is. And as long as guys are willing to accept that role, then who knows? By the time this podcast ends, you may be able to transfer without sitting out a year. So that that looks a lot like the way it's going. So who knows?
That could be another podcast unto itself.
Yeah, you don't want to get me going there.
You get a lot of people not going on that, including Tom Izzo.
Well, yeah, and I'm just gonna say this: I'm good with it, but I want the punishment if you recruit a player before he's in the transfer portal to be 5-year ban for coaches. Because plain and simple, it's going to get ugly, and you cannot. You've been a dumbass 18-year-old. You've been one.
Wait a minute.
Still am. Yeah. 39.
So have you.
So are you. Absolutely. I based this on my own decisions I wanted to make without being. I didn't even have an idiot uncle in my ear. Either that, or you have to sign a paper when you get to school that says these are the 4 family members who can't talk to me as a freshman because they're morons. And they will be in my ear. Like, I don't know what you do, but you got to save people from themselves. I get that it's right to have open transferring. Everybody acts like they do it in volleyball. Okay, listen to me. They do it in volleyball, yeah. But part of the when you get a sport with a stature of basketball and these, the entitlement comes from that. The uncle who's an idiot comes from the potential earnings. If you're playing Tiddlywinks, there's no chance to earn money, and of course you can transfer right away. Nobody cares about the Tiddlywinks team, but if you're in basketball and football, it's a different scenario, and it's going to get. I also hate what it's going to do to mid-major hoops. I hate what it's going to do to basketball overall. Michigan State's going to benefit from it. They are because they're one of the halves.
Any mid-major player who shows an Odekrim talent is going to get recruited by a Power 5 school.
So to me, you basically have to have your career destroyed, and that's the only way it works. The NCAA's got to come down so hard on you, you're done if you mess with a player before they're in the transfer portal.
I'm very upset with you that you don't know there's a World Tiddlywinks Championship.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Maybe you should do some homework
on that.
All right. There's money to be made in Tiddlywinks, Graham.
I
agree with you, though. I mean, heck, you know.
Dumb people.
But at the same point, you know, coaches don't have any parameters.
You're
going to put parameters on coaches? Okay, you got to sit out a year to go to your new school?
Well, no. I'm 100% cool with a coach leaving, kids going. Like, I'm not – if a coach leaves, kids – and I believe, that, again, I'm cool if it's truly the kid's decision. I'm true. I mean, there's nothing you should do to stop them. The problem is the reason it works in the other sports is there isn't the money and the nefarious behind-the-scenes recruiting of kids.
I think you just don't know some of the behind-the-scenes
stuff. Well, maybe there is, but nobody cares if any of it happens. So
that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Okay. So maybe we should – and maybe the other thing is that those sports shouldn't have the –
My thing is it needs to be consistent. You can't tell me that men's college basketball and football, which are predominantly – African American,
but you got
driven.
Hockey in there too. I mean,
and
it's not
hockey, which is
Canadian. I mean, the four Canadians.
Right. But here's the thing about hockey. Hockey has that ability to pull guys out.
Yeah.
Right in midstream. Yep. If you don't like it, I'm going to play over in Canada and pay major juniors to get paid.
I just hate it.
Those other sports don't necessarily have that unless they turn pro.
All I know is this: college. All this is absurd. All the college sports stuff is really ridiculous. Like people are.
But we're. Partially employed.
We are. But what I mean is people are sitting there. We got people writing articles criticizing Mel Tucker because donors were hoodwinked. Like, who do you think's responsible for all of this in this world, in this college major? It's donors. It's the gray-haired obsession with your alma mater. That's weird and bizarre and unhealthy, but we all love it. And so, like, understand that our upset, don't if you screw with the sport too much, you don't want to make it unhealthy. You know what I mean?
But here's the other thing. 3/4 of those rules that are put in place, coaches have agreed upon because someone or another in their profession has abused this, that, or the other thing.
That's true.
How many coaches love to live in the gray area of the rules that they create themselves?
True.
All right, last basketball thing.
Well,
here.
I'm sorry. I get on a tangent.
No, I love it.
There's something about that particular rule that drives me nuts. And there's part of me that wants chaos. I want the whole sport to crumble, and then people can realize how delicate it all was and how nobody actually cares about any of these athletes except for the affiliation to the school. And once we start to realize that, we won't mess around with these sports, and we have them so delicately perfect for a while.
Maybe we can do a podcast on the summer, because it's crazy how, like, for the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL, like, this is their minor leagues, but and those leagues don't have to pay for
not
any
for
of that.
Baseball. Baseball actually has a minor league.
Well, okay, that's good. That's backtrack the bit. Let's go NBA and NFL then. Like, this is essentially minor league baseball for them, for the pros, but the pros don't. That's free training for all the players.
I've had this conversation, and I brought this up before. I think you've probably been there when I've said it. Is I don't understand why the NBA doesn't use the G League like a minor league. You want to go out
to much more.
Do the college basketball rules exactly the way college baseball does. You want to go pro,
but
you go play in the G League for right out of high school. Whatever you want to do, you come to college. You're signing a letter of intent that binds you there for 3 years. Whether you redshirt,
whatever,
yeah, whatever it might be. College baseball, you have 3 years, unless you withdraw and go and play at JUCO.
Yep.
Again, there is an out if you want to do it.
Think about baseball, though. Think about nobody cares. The Lansing Lugnuts here in Lansing, Michigan. We can't write about them all. They're the only game in town all summer. You know how many articles I'm going to do about them? Probably zero.
Right. You know what?
Because nobody cares. Nobody cares about the actual athletes. It's the affiliation to the school that gives these athletes their worth. And I'm just – that's a whole different topic.
I have a big problem with people in the college basketball world who say these kids aren't ready. They can't be out on their own at 18 years old doing it. There are 16-year-old Dominican kids living in Lansing playing for the Lugnuts, for goodness sakes. A full culture difference. I think Johnny from Chicago can go play in Bismarck for a winter and be fine.
You know what those 16-year-olds don't have, though? Dumbass uncles.
They do. They're called Buscados, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, and you see that in hockey, too. You know, youngsters going all over the place.
We've gone way off on a tangent because this subject, for whatever reason, it grinds me how many people are these sanctimonious
media members. It all affects Michigan State sports, so we're not necessarily tangent. We're just.
I was going to propose my four-tiered professional basketball system, but we'll do that another time.
Another day. July.
All right. Predictions for Thursday. Did the Spartans rebound with a big win, or do we see some of the symptoms rising up once again and we see a shock loss?
I'll say this. It's a tough atmosphere there. It's a great venue. Yes. And Nebraska has shown flashes. I mean, Maryland didn't show up the last time Nebraska was there, and they had a shot to win the game. And so I do think Nebraska is one of the two teams in the Big Ten that's just at another level down.
But and that other team that was another level down only lost by 5 at home to Michigan State.
No doubt. I think Michigan State wins this game, but I don't think they're running Nebraska out of the gym.
Yeah, I think it's going to play out similar to the Northwestern game. I think maybe even close to the game, was it 2 years ago down at Nebraska, where they gave him a complete dogfight, got back in it, and Michigan State survived down there. I see them, 4-6 point win, but they'll work for it. And listen, the Fred Hoiberg factor is real. Not just because of what he brings to Nebraska, but in this game in particular, he spent time around this program, understands this program, knows what the personnel is, and knows what the system is. That, to me, is something that is important in this game, and it's going to make it a close game.
Sounds good. Hey, will you cut all the parts in this podcast where I don't sound like a reasoned person?
Jeez, are we going to... So we're going to have Phil's intro and Phil's outro. All right.
I just saw in the middle of this whole thing on Twitter, and there's one thing that said, you know what it is more than anything? It's the sanctimonious crap from fellow media members. Like, oh, these, it just, anyway, that's what it is. That's what sets me off.
Do you want me to leave that in?
Oh, leave all that in. Okay.
All right. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Graham_couch, at Chris Solari, at Phil_friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.